Welcome to EHS on Tap. I'm your host, Jay Kumar, Editor-in-Chief of EHS Daily Advisor. This week I talked to Bimal Vasani, Head of Commercial Strategy and Business Development for Ansell, about using technology to improve worker ergonomics. And now, on to the interview.
I'm joined today by Bimal Vasani, Head of Commercial Strategy and Business Development for Ansell. How's it going, Bimal?
I'm good, Jay. How are you doing?
Great to have you back on the show. We're going to talk a bit about ergonomics and technology, but just to refresh people's memories, if they don't remember, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do with Ansell.
Yeah, hey, thanks again for inviting me on the show. I really appreciate the time here. I'll do the abridged version of my background. So definitely enjoying the safety experience here. I've got about 20 years experience in B2C, B2B world. Been with Ansell for a little over 13 years now in global regional roles, both in marketing and sales leadership, really focused on areas like industrial manufacturing, some stuff in aerospace as well. Ansell, for what we're working on is, we're about a 130-year-old company focused on leading the world to a safer future. And this is just everything we're doing with our ergonomics area here is about creating that safer future and staying two steps ahead of people's safety in the workplace. My role is commercial strategy and business development leader for the Americas. It's just making sure that everybody understands what value we can provide to end users out there in the marketplace as it relates to ergonomics and utilizing data and analytics to make people safer and more productive every day.
All right, well, let's talk about that. How can technology help with worker ergonomics?
So there's a couple of ways, we see technology as it relates to the worker safety. The first one is really this assessment style of work. So every organization out there is doing some sort of yearly ergonomic assessment of a job task. And sometimes these organizations have hundreds, if not thousands, of roles that they have to do these assessments with. And historically, what they've done is really looked at these as a way to develop that ergonomic understanding of each job task. It's done by either a third-party ergonomist they bring in, somebody from safety, or in some cases, a line manager that comes in and just does it. And it's mundane, monotonous, really arduous work. It's taking a camera, taking a video for a minute to 2 minutes, and then counting frame by frame the movements that people have. So you can imagine this takes an hour, two, even 3 hours sometimes of them having to do it. And it can be really, really biased to how a person looks at that degree of movement. So the way I see 15 degrees movement in a hand is different from how you see it, Jay, versus how anybody else does. So that count can be inaccurate as well, right? It's not data or factually based. And so there's that challenge with it of, is it the right data coming in? Is it repeatable? And then how much it costs in people being off from the regular work that's being done there. And it's something that you just have to do on a regular basis. The second that I see where technology is really helping in ergonomics is the idea of how you engineer your ergonomic space. So traditionally, you have a bunch of engineers, nothing against engineers out there, but because I know they're really brilliant people, but they sit down and they look for ways to be more efficient, more productive with their applications that they're creating or the workflows they're creating. A lot of times safety becomes a checkmark at the end of it. It's something that's done later on. And what'll happen is with technology, you can almost predict or see it beforehand how people's movements will change in the hand, wrist, shoulder, lumbar area as they look at those different job tasks that are being done. And so now you get more proactive to that engineering process and being able to give an assessment of how it will affect a worker. Not only do you get more productive with your operation side, but you're not harming your people by creating an adverse situation or a potentially hazardous role.
Mm-hmm. So what are invisible risks and how can data help to identify them?
Yeah, so risks everywhere, man. Especially ergonomic ones, right? Everybody's facing them. You get people who have been doing their job for 10, 15 years. They keep doing it the same way. And sometimes they lapse and they have some sort of injury that they may have created through a back strain or, you know, a wrist strain or anything like that. And then you got new employees. They haven't been trained properly or they haven't had enough time to be trained properly. And they come in and the first couple of months, they're straining something as well because they just weren't taught efficiently how to do it. And to me, those are those invisible risks that you don't see them immediately materialize in front of you. Like in safety, when we talk about risk, you can see a hazard like a laceration hazard or a chemical burn or those kind of things. You understand that's in there, a pinch or a crush. But with these areas of ergonomics where it's repetitive injuries done over a long time, it takes a long time for it to materialize, right? So it can be done through those repetitive motions and you're not going to see it right away, but the worker starts to experience some muscle soreness. Then they go through some fatigue because the muscle didn't get enough time to recover between their shifts. And then you start to get to, well, they can't really have the full range of motion that they're usually doing to a full-blown injury where they say, look, I just can't do the job that I'm supposed to do. And that impact to the company is, you know, losing that person off the shop floor. You're reducing that person's home life experience, right? So they can't do everything that they want to be happy. And then, you know, not but certainly not least is the cost is significant dollars. Right. I mean, the average MSD right now in the U.S. is costing the employer about, you know, $60,000 to $200,000 per injury. So pretty significant. I think when you start to look at using the data, you can really show how these certain jobs and these tasks and these repetitive motions that they've got, how they become potentially a hazardous task. And then that allows the ergonomic team or the EH&S team to understand the movements that people are experiencing and come up with a plan or a program to mitigate or prevent those injuries on a long-term basis.
Are you seeing more focus on MSDs and ergonomics now than maybe 10, 20 years ago? You know, obviously they're not, you know, if we're talking about invisible risks, they're not the most obvious risks, you know, as opposed to, you know, amputation or something like that with heavy machinery. But are you seeing that kind of focus, you know, kind of honing in now?
Yeah, I mean, it's the number one injury in the U.S. manufacturing segment right now. $16 billion a year people are spending on this thing. But the for every dollar of prevention, they're getting $2 back. So the ROI is ridiculous on this thing. I think what's happening is that, you know, we've now gone to that zero safety goal that everybody's got, right? And so that's easy. We want to reduce tripping hazard. Want to make sure people aren't getting their hands crushed or people aren't getting cut, those types of things. Again, those are in your face. You can see those hazards that are coming. And now it's, I think, that natural evolution within safety. Start talking about MSDs. What's so interesting, though, on this area right now is that it's not like it's new. It's been around 30, 40, 50 years, right? And people haven't been able to solve it. They haven't been able to figure out how they're gonna solve it. So I think it was 3 years ago in March, we all sat down. There were 16 founding members with the NSC where they decided to do the MSD pledge. So it's to reduce the impact of MSDs by 25% by the year 2025. And you've seen a lot of companies join. I think there's, you know, four or five shows or seminars that are done just on ergonomics now on a yearly basis. And it's something, you know, in the safety world, I didn't see that much, you know, that many people getting together to talk about this. Mm-hmm. You have people sharing across companies. So I did a speech at Congress, I think back in October, November, with the head of ergonomics for Cargill, the meat company, and then one of the ergonomic specialist managers at Boeing, and then me from Ansell. Like, these are companies that normally don't talk, right?
Right.
They're talking about ergonomics. So I think it's front and center for a lot of people.
Are they going to be able to hit that 25% pledge, or is it still kind of a work in progress?
I mean, I think there's been a few companies that didn't realize how big a problem it really was and how much work they had to do. You know what? I think I think it's probably gone less about the 25% and more about reduction, which is where it needs to be, right? The more we reduce, I think the sharing is starting to pick up a lot. You're seeing companies like Amazon talk a lot more about MSDs in their workplace. You know, we start talking to logistics companies, getting involved. Companies like United, for example, are doing seminars for that pledge. So I think it's going to be less a focus on what the number is and more about the mitigation and the sharing so that everybody can see a reduction.
And yeah, and the fact that they're actually doing something and exactly. You know, it's visible and yeah. Talk about how are digital tools and predictive analytics making workplaces safer and more efficient?
Yeah, so companies, I mean, look at the economy we're in right now. Companies are under pressure, right? They have to make more products, more widgets at a lower cost of output. And they got to make sure they got the same quality or better than they did yesterday to stay ahead of the competition and make sure the products are going through. And so that drive for efficiency continues to get engineers that are revamping those work processes I spoke about a little earlier. And sometimes that decision, they're not really taking into account the ergonomic impact to the worker that happens through that process change. And so now with wearable technologies, visual technologies that are out there, you can start to predict how that new production flow starts to affect that ergonomic challenge. So my favorite example that I've got is we're with an aerospace company where they changed the workflow on a process that they had there. And each person started to, they found turn a screwdriver more than they were before. But there was no analytics behind this. There's no data. They had somebody put on a wearable technology, one of our IoTs that we've got, and it was able to measure that they're doing supination, pronation an extra 200 times a day. Now, doesn't sound like a lot, but when you start to add that up, right, that's a highly repetitive motion. It was just created, and nobody really realized what the impact was. But where you can help it and really make it more efficient is that we're able to say, hey, they're turning their hand 200 times more than they used to. Go get them a power screwdriver for $30. And now they're not turning 200 times. They're turning 5 or 10 times, right?
Right.
Significant decrease. I think that's where you start to see that improved efficiency and you start to remove what can be potentially incredibly hazardous through that fight to getting more efficient that everybody's trying to do, by just using some digital tools that they didn't have before. Because going back to that old example of how ergonomics were taken care of, you wouldn't have a person sitting there looking over your shoulder through that whole new work process, right? They just say, oh, well, you know, tell me at the end of it, does this make sense? Is anybody being unsafe? And unless they saw somebody working for 8 hours, and you know, who wants somebody standing over their shoulder for 8 hours, right? Looking at anything that they're doing, they wouldn't know. So this is a great way to use those digital tools to get more preventative and predictive in it.
And this can also help with corrective actions, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you start to use AI and machine learning, you start to be able to look at profiling certain jobs and certain tasks and how hazardous they could be for those workers. So start to look at, you know, even in the future, right? So somebody comes in and they're stocking shelves, for example, you can now know that, you know, on average, a person that is stocking shelves for 2 hours needs to be rotated to sweeping the floor to remove the repetitive motion that they've got from a supination, pronation, or somebody's lifting a box on a regular basis, you move them to doing another job task to reduce that as well. So there's different ways that you can start to create corrective actions in there. And then that those solutions then allow you to start moving people or creating more more positive work environments for people. And that has a ramification across the board, right? Because you're not just having somebody that is coming in doing the same job all day long. You know, it's not Lucy in the chocolate factory, right? Where they're just trying to keep up with what's coming at them and doing it that way. It's really the idea of, hey, we're going to have them doing this job for a couple of hours. We know that if they're working in an efficient manner, the way we want them to, we'll move them over to this area because it counteracts those measures. And so I think that's where you can really start again to get corrective, more efficient, and take out the idea of a poor ergonomic experience for a worker.
And that's sort of, I guess a different viewpoint from the days when Lucy was in the chocolate factory, where, you know, it's just about let's keep cranking on this, you know, as much production as possible, but not thinking about, well, what if we burn out this worker, or, you know, the person gets injured from doing the same thing, you know, for 8-10 hours a day for, you know, however many days a year. So.
Yeah. You know, and I can't remember if I gave the Walmart example last time when we were together. And if I did, apologize to the listeners, but, you know, Walmart, I worked with Procter & Gamble for many years, and back in the heyday where Walmart was just eating market share like crazy. And what they did was they created a connected technology system for logistics for themselves. They were the best in the world. So if you bought a box of Tide, a signal went from them to their order desk. The order desk sent it to P&G. P&G started creating a truck in the background, a virtual truck, to having that thing fulfilled, and it went to the right DC center. So they were never out of stock, right? Their out of stock rate was there. And I think what we're doing now is looking at this production value of the whole chain of operations. As you start to connect your workers to that world, ergonomics is a big aspect of it, right? I mean, you'd ask any company, especially right now when there's not a lot of people that are there for labor, there's not a lot of people that are sitting on the we'll call it on the bench, right? Waiting to be thrown in by the coach, that if they lose 2-3 people, you know, these things take 12 weeks to come back to some sort of job operation. You don't have somebody that's going to pinch hit for you for 12 weeks, right? You're now going to have to find some way to figure it out. That has productivity issues to you. It has morale issues to everybody else. They start to question stuff. So it's front and center now. And I think, yeah, you're definitely right on that one.
Probably increases the chance of more injuries too, if you've got fewer people doing more work too, right? So
exactly. Yeah, because I mean, nobody's okay with producing less, right? And not it's and you see it, you know, as I walk factory floors, I can see it in people's minds. They go, well, you know, you're asking people to stretch their hands out sometimes to counteract these measures. Well, if I lose 30 seconds every hour, that's this many widgets, and you start to see their numbers going. They need to get through their mind that 30 seconds is more an investment in somebody's workday to reduce the fatigue that they feel in hour 5, 6, and 7, where maybe their productivity goes down 20%. Instead, now because they're stretching, it's only going down 10% in those hours instead.
What is predictive maintenance, and how can that improve worker safety?
Yeah, so predictive maintenance is an interesting field now that's come in, right? So folks are using technology and IoTs on the actual machinery to start predicting when it might get to the point of failure, right? And so this is put a temperature sensor on a machine. You know, when it gets to a certain temperature, it's going to break down at some point, right? And so that's predictive maintenance in a nutshell. When you start to look at it from a safety perspective, then you start to look at how that's impacting the safety of a person. And for me, the best way to describe it is with a forklift, for example, right? So generally what happens in the world right now for most places, you have a forklift, the safety check's done every single morning, right? So somebody comes in, they check the horn, the brakes, the lights, the reverse sound to make sure it's done. Gets done with a pen and a clipboard, and hopefully somebody sees it along the way. It's not just a safety check, right? And so I think where you start to get into predictive maintenance is the idea of starting to have this real-time communication that goes back to the system so you can make decisions quickly. So for example, it may be that the brake hasn't failed, but it feels different than it did 2 days ago when somebody was on it, right? And that happens another day. Still hasn't failed, right? So it doesn't get the fail mark on it, but there's something that's off with it. And what now you could do with predictive maintenance is say that when I get three of those, something's a little off, I shut down that forklift. So now I don't get a brake failure. I go and I get maintenance, go check that thing out before I get a problem. Yeah. So previously,
don't wait for it to happen.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. It used to be, let's go do the reactive investigation to see what happened. You know what? On the clipboard, it said things were off on this thing, but nobody read it. We had a brake failure and somebody got hurt. Right. Instead, now, well, no, we're going to shut it down. If we get three of these things, somebody go and look at it and let's just, you know, somebody from maintenance is going to jump in there pretty quick. Because somebody in the warehouse group is going to say, hey, I can't go down on I can't lose a forklift here for multiple days, right? So, yeah, I think that's where it's really started to take shape. I think when you start to get into even predictive maintenance with the machinery, and it's an emerging field that's coming in, right, is that temperature understanding, vibration, where you're starting to connect people to it that – the paper checklist at the big machines that just can't break down. It's a thing of the past. People can't afford to hope that things aren't going to break down before it's a scheduled maintenance that's on there.
Yeah, makes sense. So where do you see all this technology taking us in the next 10 to 20 years? What are your sort of hopes for where these things can go? Because obviously we're kind of still at the early stages of, maximizing this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think with ergonomics and specifically, we're going to see a continued increase of assistance, right? So it'll be items that'll be able to help you carry heavier things, right? Mm-hmm. To reduce those ergonomic strains on you. It'll be much better training that happens at the start of a person's career so that they don't get those injuries that happen in those first 3 months. And then I think what you'll start to see, and it's something I've become a little bit of an advocate on, I've started to look at some articles and maybe even some thought pieces that we can talk about this, is the idea of bringing safety with a seat at the table. And I think that's what I'd like to see over the next 5 to 10 years. Right now, safety is under the operations leader. And if you ask most operations leader, does safety have a seat at the table? They'd say, well, I think they do. They really don't, right? Like they're usually a check mark at the end of the day. Yeah, it's a safe, good. Okay, safety's okay with it. Keep going, guys, right? And I think what I'd like to see is this idea of safety being part of that development phase and be part of where they're in it at the start. So I think that's one phase that I think will work really well. The idea of using the AI and the machine learning to start predicting potentially hazardous jobs, I think gets us into this area of either automating those jobs, but there's some that just can't be automated that are manual jobs that we won't be able to prevent, right? But it then becomes, how do you get to a more ergonomically safe environment for those people? So people aren't going home with an injury after 10 or 15 weeks of doing the same job, or 20 years in and they can't do the job that they've been doing for 5 years, right? So those kind of things. I think that's where I'd like to see the world go. I mean, I think you and I both know machine learning is an AI technology. I mean, geez, it's impacting everybody now, right? I mean, everybody's figuring some way to use AI within their job, how to make them more efficient with what they're doing. I think it'll continue down that road. But I think, again, just like with wearable technologies when we talked last time, I think the idea of having multiple items, even in ergonomics, it's going to be difficult for people to don, 10 different technologies to do this. Right. It's not going to work for them. So we're going to have to, I think, start picking off areas that are most important, look at those ones to prevent those injuries and see where you can automate to get those unsafe practices out.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, Bimo, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. This has been great.
No, thanks again. Love coming on to the show and talking to your listeners. I know there was a lot of people that pulled me aside and said they'd heard it. So you got a good listenership here. I want to give you kudos on that one. And yeah, thanks. And again, if you need anything else, let me know. Or if anybody listening wants to talk more about ergonomics or Ansel and Teleforce, tell them to send me a note and we'll make sure we get in touch with them right away.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Great. All right. Take care.
All right.
That wraps up episode 201 of EHS On Tap. You can find more information about the show and listen to on-demand episodes at ehsdailyadvisor.blr.com. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get podcasts. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join me next time.